Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, very exciting, we're interviewing a skin scientist. It's Dr. Barbara Paldas. She's a Canadian-born scientist, entrepreneur, investor. She's renowned for her contributions to spectroscopy and biotechnology and sustainable skincare. She actually got a Bachelor's of Science in Math and Electrical Engineering from University of Waterloo, followed by a PhD in Electrical Engineering from Stanford. And by the time she was 34, she founded two Silicon Valley companies, including Picaro, which specialized in greenhouse gas detection for climate change monitoring, and Finesse Solutions. This developed biotech equipment for cancer and vaccine therapy monitoring. And then recently in 2018, she founded Codex Labs, which is also a silicon-based company that creates sustainable plant-based skincare solutions with clinically proven results. She has a new product coming out for eczema, and she just drives the innovation of science and sustainability for skin. So excited to welcome you. Thank you for coming on, Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. K.
Well, so you started in electrical engineering and math and all things hard science, and then how did you transition to interest in skin?
So what happened was when I was running Finesse Solutions, we were making bioprocessing automation solutions. So we were working with the vaccine manufacturers like J&J, Pfizer, et cetera. We were working with monoclonal antibody and cancer therapeutic companies. And my son was actually diagnosed with ADHD when he was 9. And that was in 27, well, actually 8 when he was in 2017. And so I had to make a life choice. And I could either keep traveling and growing the company. We were roughly 65 million at that point in revenue, and I was traveling 3 weeks out of the month and had two nannies, or I could sell the company and actually be present for my child. And my child actually had eczema. So I chose the latter. I sold the company in basically 2017 and left because the company that bought it was still making me travel a lot. And so I left in 2018 and we resolved, as best we could, the management of his ADHD, a management of his eczema. And I became very interested in skin because I was always trying to figure out the root cause of what had caused his eczema. Now, obviously, that's impossible because we don't know whether eczema starts on the inside or it starts on the outside. We know that there's that inflammatory cascade with IL-13 and IL-4 and IL-31, but it led me to be very interested in skin products. And so we started actually in cosmetics because that's a little bit easier than starting jumping right into medical dermatology. And we started studying the skin barrier. We started studying skin inflammation. We started studying sebum production. By that time, he had started to develop acne. So we also had to deal with acne. And that led me to founding Codex. And we are doing a lot of research now also on gut microbiome and internal inflammation and gut inflammation. And we're realizing that to solve skin problems, you actually need to start on the inside. It's not just about the outside to get the full effect.
That's so true. And you also had developed kind of a dermatology telehealth platform. Can you describe what that patient experience looks like?
Absolutely. So we've been developing it for 2 years because we wanted to do something very different than what your typical, we're going to have a video, we're going to have a transcript, I'm going to prescribe you something. We wanted something for the next generation dermatologist. And so part of the platform that we're going to be launching at the American Academy of Dermatology in March is a series of diagnostics, integrated diagnostics. So not just your typical standard saliva hormone test or hsCRP blood spot for inflammation, but also more rare things like heavy metals, because it turns out there's far more lead and arsenic in the American diet through our supplements and other sources that a lot of people are not aware of, which can cause, again, hives. They can cause rashes, neurotransmitters, which, so this whole psychodermatology aspect, we're now starting to study the impacts of stress, the impacts of these neurotransmitters, for example, on acne flare-ups, eczema flare-ups, psoriasis flare-ups, and then obviously a test that's usable for the dermatologist on the gut microbiome. And then we're also educating dermatologists on parasitics. H. pylori, I think, is far more common than we'd like to admit, and things like Candida, Clostridium, E. coli. It's just good to have that screen. And especially if people travel to exotic locations on vacation or South America, Mexico, Northern Africa, it's not that our environment may not necessarily be clean. It's people don't sometimes realize, or when they garden, in their own garden, that there may be parasites that they're bringing into their body, and that can exacerbate existing skin conditions or cause, again, rashes and redness, which are really hard to diagnose. So, parasitics, pathogen detection are all the kinds of things we're bringing onto the platform, as well as pathogens on the skin microbiome.
I love that. I think people don't realize, the gut and the skin being interconnected, deriving from the same embryologic neuroectodermal tissues are very, very connected. Like it's almost your outer skin is almost a reflection of what you have going on inside you. And I do some microbiome testing as part of your workup of, eczema, contact dermatitis, all these acne patients that come to see you.
Absolutely. The gut microbiome is incredibly important. And for example, we're now starting a clinical trial to actually look at the effects of certain probiotics and prebiotics on the gut microbiome of people with eczema. But the vast majority, especially younger eczema patients, appear to be, and I don't mean deficient in the sense that the levels are low. I mean that they're absent, like it's a zero on the test of standard Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium genera. And that to me is something that is absolutely fascinating. We still don't understand why, but it seems to be a commonality among the, among especially like 3 through 12.
I think that's fascinating. Do you believe in that concept of applying topical pre and probiotic products to the skin to give back what the skin's missing with the good bacteria?
So I believe in therapies to remove pathogens for the skin, but otherwise, I think our skin microbiome is by far not as rich as our gut microbiome from the number of species and the diversity of species on our skin. Essentially, it's an open environment, right? It's exposed to pollution, to the UV, and it's not as rich as the gut, in the sense that those bacteria rely on our sebum production, and basically what can pass through our skin. And compared to the digestive tract, where there's nutrients passing through on a continuous basis, you don't get that, the thousands and thousands and thousands of different bacteria and fungi. So I think with the skin, it's really not disturbing the microbiome in healthy skin. And in skin that's compromised, understanding what the pathogen is and eliminating that pathogen so that the skin microbiome can restore itself. Although we do have one live Lactobacillus plantarum serum now that we're launching for acne through the dermatological community. And what's interesting about that live serum, you reconstitute it. It's lyophilized Lactobacillus plantarum. You reconstitute it with water. And it actually reduces your inflammatory cytokines. And so, what we've been able to show in models, because it's kind of really, really hard to do that in how should I put it, in live human skin, although we've been able to show there's a surface change in the actual microbiome, where we can in fact shift it away from the C. acnes bacteria, but we were able to downregulate IL-1 alpha by about 94%, IL-6 by 93%, and IL-8 by 94%, and those are the primary cytokines and acne. So we're very excited. There are also primary cytokines and rosacea. So there's more studies to be done on this for because acne and rosacea do have a lot of similarities. And so we're actually very excited about looking at reducing skin inflammation by modulating the skin microbiome.
I think that's so fascinating. What is your approach to looking at DNA? Because I know you have a philosophy of going from DNA to dermis. So can you explain and break that down? What does that look like? How do you do the DNA testing? How do you really personalize the skincare plan?
So the DNA testing we do is twofold. There are two different tests. The first is actually vitamin. So we look at, vitamins A, B, C, D, E, with the three vitamin Bs. And we look at actually the body's ability to absorb, transform, and transport those vitamins, because we're looking at now correlations between various skin conditions, such as acne, propensity or the severity of acne, and for example, vitamin D deficiency. And that can be then correlated back to the genetics of the individual. And so it's fascinating to see, whether, for example, is there really a correlation between vitamin D and eczema? Is there really a correlation between vitamin B and, skin barrier inflammation? So we're studying that. And but it's really good to screen because oftentimes people, for example, they may have a lot of vitamin, a specific vitamin in their diet, like vitamin E, and yet their ability to absorb it is not very good. And so we also don't want people overdosing on vitamins, the ones that are stored in your fat. So we certainly don't want anybody to overdose on vitamin D. There was a death in the UK recently on that. So
Really? Wow.
yeah, an older gentleman just went like crazy and killed himself by, overdosing on vitamin D
That's crazy.
supplements. So you would never imagine that. And so on the skin, we look at skin barrier genes, for example, like filaggrin. We also look at things like metalloproteinases. We look at the melanin-associated genes for sun sensitivity and hyperpigmentation. And then we also look at, how your body addresses certain cytokines like IL-12, IL-23 for inflammatory skin conditions, or IL-6 and IL-8 and IL-4 for acne, or for example, IL-4 for eczema. So we look at basically that response. I think it's also important we're going to be adding allergy testing because that's also really important to understand if people truly do have allergies and do they manifest through IgA, through IgE. And that can also often lead to understanding if there's a parasite as well, kind of a backdoor to parasitics.
That's very comprehensive. I don't think, and I've heard of any dermatologist doing all that testing for any patient at that high level. So it's fascinating to know that that's available and you can ask for that. So why do you think that up to 93% of dermatologists have never ordered a genetic test for skin issues?
I think because the tests to date have not been particularly focused on dermatology. I think the tests have been focused on ancestry, or they've been focused on cancer, or the efficacy of certain drug therapeutics for various types of diseases. But I don't think there really have been any tests that have been focused purely on the things that affect skin.
Yeah, I think that that is the case, but looking at the whole organism is what affects the skin the most, I suppose, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, can you share an example like of a patient who's transformed their skin health using these kind of genetic insights?
So, for example, we have patients who have inadequacies in filaggrin. So, filaggrin being the structural protein in the skin barrier. And similarly, they often have also involucrin and loricrin deficiencies. So, it basically makes for a leaky skin barrier. So they tend to suffer from allergic reactions, skin sensitivity. And what we do there is we supplement them. We have a supplement that has L-histidine. So 4 grams per day is a clinical dose of that, as well as we have an antioxidant made from three Patagonian plants, which is a complex anthocyanin and flavanol flavonoid antioxidant for reducing overall inflammation. And we've seen a restructuring of the skin barrier for better hydration and far less allergic reactions. It's also a great supplement when somebody's suffering from hives. It's actually also a great supplement within 3 to 5 days because you start sealing up the skin barrier between. So we have a new eczema lotion coming out, which is also anti-itch. It's an OTC. So between the lotion and the supplement, you can really start reducing their allergic reaction and the redness and the itching. And obviously you want to stop them from itching as quickly as possible because they then scratch and that can lead to either scarring or open wounds. And then those can get infected. So that becomes a very negative feedback loop.
That's so fascinating. I think eczema is very underdiagnosed, very widespread, and so often, it's so difficult for young children, infants. It starts at such a young age. Why do you suppose that is? Is that you're inheriting the wrong microbiome from your mother as you come through the vaginal canal, or you're on the wrong diet? You're surrounded by, the peer group that's giving you their microbiome. What do
So
you think
some
it
of
is?
it, so definitely if you're born by C-section, you actually don't inherit your mother's microbiome from the birth canal. So that certainly can be a limitation there. I think some of it is genetic. I think because it's underdiagnosed, as you said, the parents may not know, and then you end up with a child with that genetic profile. Now, because it's an allergic disease, the shift in the research from is it genetic, is it filaggrin, has now shifted away, saying no, it's basically a cytokine-mediated allergic disease. But I think there's definitely, if you look at, for example, the correlation of children with eczema and ADHD, children with eczema have a 50% higher risk than ADHD. And as you said originally, basically the brain barrier cells, the skin barrier cells, and the gut barrier cells, are all from that original embryonic cell. And so you get leaky gut, leaky skin, leaky brain. And so it just makes me wonder. And then it's really a question of what triggers, what starts that atopic march. Right. And what starts that first inflammatory? It could be that the child has a dairy allergy, and so it's allergic to its own mother's milk. It could be that the child has a gluten allergy and it gets it in baby food. It could be that the child has a dandruff allergy to the pet at home, or there's dust mites. In Japan, they have the problem that their houses are too clean, so the children don't develop an immune system. Are we
Right.
maybe sterilizing our houses too much? You wonder, what kind of chemical could be triggering it? Could it be, I've wondered for a long time, for example, what really are the long-term effects of phenoxyethanol and all these cosmetic products that we use? We don't know. And safety profiles of things change, right? There are certain preservative systems that were considered perfectly safe 30 years ago that are now banned in the EU. So, there's something usually that triggers off that atopic march. So I would say it just depends on the child and depending on whether the gut is more leaky or the skin is more leaky. It's exposure to pollution, it's exposure to the home environment, it's exposure to what foods it's being fed. And once you trigger it, it's really hard to slow down and stop.
I think that's very true. We use too much hand sanitizer, too much soap. We wash our bodies too much. I mean, honestly, I think my mom used to tell me, don't put soap on so much everywhere, just the privates and the areas that really get grimy, but the rest of your body just needs a water rinse. And encouraging kids to go out and play in the dirt, we don't do that anymore. They're all in devices indoors on their sofas, right? I used to go out and ride our bike and play in the dirt, make mud pies, all that. But I don't see kids doing as much of that in
Me
nature, getting
too.
the
And
sunlight,
absolutely, like they don't produce their own vitamin D. And I agree with you, too much screen time and not enough movement. Is there also a correlation between the exercise? And also, I think our diets have changed in the last 30 years significantly, and the amount of processed food. Is it also ultra processed food? And also, there's ultra processed baby food. And now, right? I mean, the other thing, now what I'm watching with, kind of horror is that the FDA is putting various heavy metal levels on baby food.
Oh, that's scary. And also microplastics. I worry about what are we going to even do about microplastics? We can't all get plasmapheresis and ozone to rid our bodies of it, although, and is that even effective or recommended? But I do think the chronic exposure to the microplastics is building up, creating a reason for our immune systems to flare up and become so cytokine driven. So I think the good old sunshine and dirt and grounding and walking and barefoot in the grass and those kind of things are really going to be the way to help these kids.
I agree. There's a lot to be said for that. And on the microplastics, I mean, they now have measured them in the human brain. They've measured them in embryos. They've measured them in newborn babies. I mean, as you said, that is something that's still a huge, huge, huge unknown and what its impact is. But I just can't imagine that there's no impact on the immune system.
It's crazy. And then we put our babies in plastic diapers and then we give them a plastic bottle and a plastic pacifier. And the healthiest formula is transmitting through plastic. Even breast milk gets pumped through plastic, right? So I really don't even know. It's such a helpless situation. What do we even do? But it's fascinating to talk to someone who's looking at it at that organic level. And for eczema sufferers, you have a new product that's coming out. Can you talk a little bit about what's innovative about the new product?
Absolutely. So I'm super, super excited that the eczema product actually combines two of our kind of core, you can call them complexes. The first is obviously our preservative system, which we developed back in 2018, 2019, and is an alternative to your standard phenoxyethanol. We now have actually 5 years of shelf life. So we know that basically it's a very, very effective preservative system. And so essentially it's a biotech ferment from Lactobacillus, so which is essentially a broad spectrum antimicrobial. It has coconut oil and a ferment of coconut oil for antifungal and antiviral. And what's interesting is that the medium chain triglycerides in coconut oil actually help mitigate for Staph aureus. So for eczema, that's actually perfect. And then it has very low levels of potassium sorbate and sodium benzoate for essentially yeast and molds, which we always want to keep away. And the adjuvant in this is similar to what is used in vaccines. And so that's propanediol, in this case, a biotech plant-based version of it. And so what's great about propanediol from renewable corn fermentation is that not only does it enhance the effectiveness of the other preservative ingredients, but it's also very well tolerated. It's not sensitizing and it functions, it doubles up as an emollient and a humectant for already dry skin. And so our Bia complex, which is really the heart of this lotion, is plant stem cell extracts that are actually made in Europe. So I think we're all familiar with calendula. So this is actually a special stem cell. And then there's Habrolea, which in Bulgaria is called the Dracula plant because it's a resurrection plant. And then comfrey, which has been used in Irish traditional medicine, Sofetum officinale. And then to those three plant stem cells, we've added your standard hyaluronic acid, your ceramides, as well as Pedina pavonica, which is a marine algae, which is great at reducing itch. You know, obviously, it's an OTC, so it contains 1% colloidal oatmeal. But what's really interesting is we get a lot of antioxidants from the calendula. So everything from flavonoids to phenolic acids and carotenoids, triterpenoid alcohols, etc. And calendula has been well studied for anti-inflammation, wound healing, and its antioxidants. And then in the comfrey, what's really interesting, comfrey is high in allantoin. And we all know that allantoin is also an anti-itch and it has rosmarinic acid. So it's excellent for, you know, that dry, rough scaliness of eczema. And but it also helps proliferation of healthy tissue. And so we've done a lot of the genetic testing on human keratinocytes. And so we know that it has a role in tissue formation and differentiation, especially the development of granulation tissue and epithelialization. And then rosmarinic acid is great as basically improving skin barrier because it decreases the pH. It slightly decreases the skin surface pH, and it also can improve ceramide formation and lowering skin barrier transepidermal evaporation, and it also inhibits Staph. So you can see a lot of these plants are amazing because they're multifunctional. And then the Habrolea, it's actually a tertiary relic plant from the Balkans, and it's rich in myconocyte. And so, to those who may not be as familiar with myconocyte, it basically increases mRNA synthesis of collagen 6 and collagen 16 and elastin in peroxide stress fibroblasts. So we've basically again studied that, and this is there to stimulate the extracellular matrix synthesis to really, I mean, our goal here is a lotion that improves skin barrier cohesion, improves skin elasticity, and then the Pedina, basically it's a brown algae from the Mediterranean. It has your polyphenols, polysaccharides, but it's very rich in laminarins and fucoidins and alginic acid. So basically those algae components that moisture moisturize, prevent dryness and cracking, but also protect cell mitochondrial function. And it essentially all of it helps reduce the itch. And it's done in sunflower oil. So again, non-allergenic oil, not like almond oil, because sunflower oil has a very high concentration of linoleic acid, typically 60%, which again is great for the skin barrier and is an emollient and tool reduction. So it was basically the product was geared very much towards that damaged, dry, losing water type of skin and eczema, which is also itchy. And I'm excited to tell you, Dr. K, our clinical data shows a 99% reduction of SCORAD in 8 weeks for mild atopic dermatitis, and a 93% reduction in SCORAD and in mild in moderate atopic dermatitis, and a 95%+ reduction in itch. So we're super excited. So we can't wait for those manuscripts to publish.
That's amazing. Yeah, when is that going to be published? And also for the audience, what is SCORAD? It's the an index that you're using to.
Exactly. There are different scores for eczema, but essentially the definition, this is an older score, and it basically stands for there's A, B, and C, which is kind of the extent, the intensity, and the subject. And so our moderate is kind of considered 25 to 50. Anything greater than 50 is considered severe eczema, and it was developed in 1993 by the European Task Force. And so AD stands for atopic dermatitis, and SCORE stands for score. So it's basically a clinical evaluation tool for atopic dermatitis. There's other scores like the Global Assessment Score Index, and then there's also EASI, which is a more local score. So we just pick SCORAD because it's been around for a long time.
Okay, so 99% reduction, and that was at 6 weeks, you said?
8 weeks.
8 weeks. Wow, that's incredible. So this is an over-the-counter product. It does not require a prescription that people can pick up for their eczema child or family member and have really amazing results.
Absolutely.
That's going
Absolutely.
to be transformative, I think. Instead of like currently, if you have severe eczema, you rely on steroids, you rely on emollient creams and things, and then you rely on biologic therapies, which are, prescription products, extremely expensive. They could be a shot or a topical. What's the efficacy of those kind of products if you're comparing the prescription products?
So there are non-steroid topicals that came out last year and this year that have been approved by the FDA. They run about $1,000 for a tube. And I would say, they're comparable in efficacy. But you can see there's a massive price difference. Obviously, for severe eczema, it's a completely different, it's a completely different issue. And so I think the biologics absolutely have a very important role to play. But we think that at least for mild and moderate atopic dermatitis, we want to provide definitely an alternative to corticosteroids, because one of my biggest fears with my son was, I know it's still not recognized as a disease, but topical steroid withdrawal syndrome. I have a lot of friends in the community, and what these folks go through is just unimaginable. I mean, the pain and the suffering that they go through. So, if we can minimize, I mean, again, steroids were developed for a very specific use, a very specific short-term, let's knock the inflammation down use. But if you look at how they've been used over the last 20, 30 years, with people being on corticosteroids for 20, 30 years to treat eczema, I'm not sure that that was the original intended, even FDA approval for those medications. And so it's just interesting how usage has evolved over time, and some of the original guidelines from the 70s are not always necessarily followed in terms of the maximum dosage and then time breaks, et cetera. So I think it would be great to have a new tool in the overall toolbox for treating eczema.
Fascinating. I think the price point will be really affordable and accessible. So $40, $45 versus $1,000, that's crazy. At least something you can start with before you see if you need anything stronger. What's the name of the product and where will we be able to buy it?
So you'll be able to buy it on our website initially. We're launching that at the end of this month, end of January. It's called Eczema Relief Lotion, and it'll be part of our eczema collection. We also have a soap that was part of the clinical study, and it's actually, we went to Ireland. We manufacture it in Ireland. It's a 400-year-old process. It's a cold process. We had to transfer it from, they used to use bone. We wanted the soap to be vegan, so we had to transfer it to shea butter and cocoa butters and olive oil type. And the unscented soap that goes with the lotion It actually is one of the first non-microbiome stripping soaps. So as we talked earlier about, not affecting that skin microbiome, not stripping it so that pathogens can colonize the skin, we were able to do a soap which has a very, very high glycerin content, which kind of goes again against the grain of all the cleansing bars that are now on the market, that where people strip the glycerin out, or triple milled soaps and other types of soaps that don't have a high glycerin content. So a lot of people, when they first use the soap, say, "Oh my God, this is kind of slimy. It doesn't have, all that foam production that I'm used to from the commercial soaps." But it cleans incredibly well. We know that it can remove 98% of pollution from tests where we've done iron particles, 10 micron iron particles on skin, and then we wash it with the soap. So we know it's a very effective cleaning agent compared to even a cleansing bar. But the most important thing is it does not strip moisture. So we've done clinical studies on the body, face. It does not strip moisture, it does not strip skin sebum, and most importantly, it does not strip the microbiome, and it does not change the diversity of the microbiome on the skin. So it's kind of like a pair. And I wanted this to be accessible because there's so many families out there, especially single moms, or communities that are, underserved, that can't afford or don't have medical coverage. And a lot of these newer products, not every medical coverage either covers it, even if you're working and you have a corporate medical care. And so I wanted something that pretty much everybody could afford, because I know a lot of people here in California. I work with certain communities, and they're single moms. They get a baby. The baby has eczema, and it just completely, destroys the mother's life. Like, she's trying to care for this child. She's trying to keep her apartment. She's trying to feed everybody. And so, to me, this is kind of a mission of love.
Amazing. What is the Irish connection? Is that a part of your background, or just like there's amazing nature and heritage and culture there?
So that's actually a really funny story. So I mentioned my son had eczema, and since I was working in biotech, I was traveling a lot. And Pfizer has a plant in near Cork in Ireland, which is one of our customers for making cancer therapeutics. And I used to go through the airport, and because my son had eczema, I was constantly searching every single duty free, every single local store. Oh, do you have a balm? Oh, do you have something, that's preservative free, that's oil based? Oh, do you have some herb for eczema? Oh, do you have something? And I found actually a set of products in Ireland at the Cork airport of all places, not Dublin. And when I sold my company, I ended up buying this little company because it was going to go under. And I needed that cream for my son. And that's how we met the ethnobotanists and the naturopathic doctors that worked with this company. And Rosary Kingston, she's an herbalist and a naturopathic doctor in Ireland. She's in her 70s. She's written several books on Irish flora and Irish natural medicine. And she is an encyclopedia. She's just an amazing woman and an encyclopedia of Irish plants. And that's where we discovered this comfrey and the calendula that are in the current formulation. So Ireland's been essentially our skin barrier plant library for 5 years.
That's amazing. I love that background story. The ingredients that you've selected, they all sound like, they actually have a lot of molecular biologic cues and activity and messaging that they send to cells. So although this is all nature driven, it's really working at the molecular biologic level of, cueing up anti-inflammation. So I think that's so fascinating. How did you narrow it down just based with Rosemary's advice as well as
Her
your own?
advice and a lot of screening, like a lot of genetic screening of what does this do to human keratinocytes? What does that do to human keratinocytes? What does this cell extract do? What does that cell do? So we started with the plants, and then we narrowed it down to specific cells. And we're very fortunate to be working with a biotech that can now manufacture that specific plant stem cell that activates those specific genes reproducibly, highly sustainably, but also with very high potency. And so that's why we're really not, I don't want to be a farmer. I don't want to be dependent on the weather. During COVID, nobody was picking the plants from the field. So I'd much rather make it having come from biotech, I'd much rather make it in a bioreactor. And then we know it's pure. We know there's no heavy metal contamination. We're not worried about pesticides or pollution being transmitted with the wind. And we know exactly the reproducibility and the potency. So we see this as next generation plant biotech, and it's really plant plant pharma in a way.
Yeah. How do you feel that products derived from plant cells communicate biologically with human cells? I mean, our cells are very different. We don't have cell walls. We are, mammalian cells. So are there evolutionary cues that are ancient enough that they will still talk to human cells?
So I think because we have co-evolved with plants, if you look at humans, we've been eating plants, we've been using plants to treat ourselves. We're actually not the only species that uses plants. We now know that various other orangutan or gorilla species use plants for treating wounds. So I would say because we've co-evolved with plants and there's so much traditional medicine, there's Ayurveda, there's Chinese traditional medicine, there's European traditional medicine. I don't think we can just associate ourselves from plants as humans. So I think that synergistic effect has been there for, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. And so it's now a matter of using the new tools that we have, right? The genetic screening, looking at what genes are activated or deactivated by specific plant cells with specific human type cells. Like, for example, for acne, we study sebacites as opposed to keratinocytes. And then understanding, can we affect the cytokines? We know certain plants cause allergies, we know other plants can calm allergies. So there's definitely, we know that the effects are there. And I think now understanding the science and the root causes behind it is the fascinating part. And that's the part of the journey for the next, set of decades as we refine, our ability to do genetic experimentation, genetic screening, as we refine our tissue models, our cell models. We also study penetration. We also do a lot of spectroscopic studies of how our products penetrate through the skin barrier. How far do they go? Can they make it to the dermis? We were studying, for example, how can we rebuild collagen, et cetera? How can we reduce inflammation? How can we rehydrate, at the various epidermal and dermal levels? And so I'd say the science is now, the analytics that we have is now reaching a level where we can hopefully start understanding. And then, as you said, then there's the whole other, there's the gut, and then there's the microbiome, and then there's the brain, the kind of psychodermatological aspects. And then how do you wrap all that together? And hopefully with the advent of more computational power and AI, we'll be able to start sorting through that data over the next decade. But we're just scratching the surface.
It's so fascinating. I'm a huge fan of collagen stimulators and improving, the skin barrier, the water content of the skin. Do you have any longevity hacks that you're doing yourself, or what are you putting on for your daily anti-aging type skincare?
So I love the Antu collection that we have. I kind of developed that for myself. I was kind of in my late 40s at that point. And it has the complex of these three Patagonian plants that we discovered, again, purely by chance, through the ethnobotany world. And it's there, we call it M3 because the three plants start with the letter M in Spanish. And they're from Chile, actually. And they are plants that have been used by the Mapuche for many, many, many hundreds of years. So there's Matico, Maqui, and Murta. And these are basically very flavonoid, anthocyanin, and everything again, triterpenoids, et cetera. Antioxidants, because they're complex, they're actually far more stable. So we don't have to worry about, for example, the formulation of ascorbic acid, vitamin C, or astaxanthin, which is incredibly reactive. So we see excellent, excellent, excellent stability. But what's more interesting is that the Mapuche eat them. So I love our M3 supplement. We're going to be doing a half dose for people who want to use it for longevity rather than for treating things like eczema or psoriasis. And we compared it to some of the other antioxidants that we know, other than vitamin C, obviously, but also black tea, green tea, turmeric, curcumin. And what was interesting is that its overall antioxidant capacity in this ratio of the three plants that the Mapuche have optimized over hundreds of years beat pretty much. It's like the overall MVP player of these antioxidants. So we measured, for example, molecular diffusion through the cell membrane. We measured, total antioxidant capacity for ABTS or for peroxyl radicals. We looked at DPPH for radical scavenging ability. And it was basically in the top two for every single one. And so you have certain, some of these antioxidants that are really great, for example, for ORAC or great for DPPH, but they're not as great for the other four measures. And this one was significantly, it was basically either number one or number two for every single measurement, consistently. And so, for me, this is basically for reducing gut inflammation and systemic inflammation, which is longevity. And then it's also in our Onto serum, which we know penetrates all the way to the dermis. And we have clinical data showing it redensifies skin by 30%, 28% actually, in about 8 weeks. And so I use those two products. Those are my kind of two go-to, travel with, live with, can't leave out of my sight.
That's good. It's easy. It's best when you have a really simplistic routine, I've found. Then I can stick with it, especially when traveling and lecturing and stuff like that. How about oral supplements? Are you taking
That's
resveratrol?
my oral supplement. So the M3
Those are your
supplement. So I
oral.
put it on my skin and
And
I
BU
take the
as
supplement with the histidine just to keep my skin barrier,
well. Yeah.
intact and to keep the inflammation at
But
bay
anything
internally.
other than that, are you taking, resveratrol or NAD or other longevity type
Nope. Actually, what I have started taking is we have a new prebiotic that, again, I kind of developed not just for myself, but also for anyone with, gut issues, whether that's leaky gut to just generic digestive issues. And that one is neat because we actually took a huge gamble on resistant potato starch, which is actually now by Health Canada, it's considered, it's been just designated a medical food because it enhances the abundance of your beneficial gut flora, specifically Akkermansia that we're hearing a lot about and Bifidobacterium. So that's basically one of the key ingredients. Obviously, a lot of prebiotics have chicory root, but we also went to things like marshmallow root from Irish medicine because it's not just a soluble fiber and antioxidant, but it really protects the gut mucosa. So in a way, we developed, how should I put it, a microbiome rebalancing gut mucosa restoring prebiotic because a lot of people, they think about, a lot of the oligosaccharides, but they don't really think about antioxidants and really balancing the soluble and insoluble fibers. And so we also have aronia berry pomace in there. So that again supports butyrate producing bacteria, and the butyrate is essential for gut barrier integrity. And then we included glutamine, which is really important for the tight junction proteins for gut barrier integrity. And then, there's other superfoods like, ginger for gastric emptying and pomegranate for urolithin A, anti-inflammatory urolithin A. So what we try to do is we try to create this like one overall prebiotic that supports the gut bacteria, can help synthesize urolithin A, kind of really restores your gut mucosa and improves the leakiness, basically fortifies your gut barrier because if you're then taking probiotics, if your gut is not in good shape, there's no point. It's basically throwing money out the door.
Well, this is fascinating. I feel like I could hang out with you for hours. I'm definitely interested. I'm a skincare nerd and longevity nerd, and I really admire this really science-driven product that you've created. So I can't wait for consumers to have this available to them, and I can't wait to see what you come up with next. Really, I think you're thinking about skin at such an biologic key level. And I love that all of your experiments are tested on keratinocytes. Like, I think that there are very few companies out there doing that level of science. So, congrats.
Thank
Where can people find you, Dr. Paldies, if they want to reach out or learn more about your upcoming launch of your eczema medicine?
So, we launched during COVID, so I still have post-COVID trauma. So we're still found on just our website. I'm like retailers, I'm like traumatized by, we launched in Australia to a retailer and they were shut down for 18 months. So we do everything. We ship very quickly. So we're both on Amazon and we're on codexlabscorp.com. And I would say for more information, if people sign up for our newsletter, we send out, two, three newsletters a month. We try to educate. Obviously, they can find out about new product launches on there. And we also have a separate dermatology for any professionals. We have a separate dermatology portal where dermatologists can prescribe some of our more microbiome modulating products that are not available to the general public. There are professional products, and there's a provider. If you go to our website, there's a little provider tab in the top menu, and providers can sign up to be part of our professional programs.
Wow, that's so fascinating. Okay, there you have it, guys. I hope you all will go check this out. These ingredients are next level. The science is real, and I believe that you're going to really make a huge impact on this community of eczema and psoriasis sufferers and really driving science to that level of like making things accessible and affordable and like very evidence-based. So there you have it. Check out Codex Labs. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, doing amazing things with people's faces and biohacking beauty, longevity, and wellness, all the things that you need to look and feel your best. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.